Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And James Grosvick.
Hey, James. Hey, I got a question that I think's right up your alley the other day. And you know that we ask for questions all the time. And apparently people are listening to the podcast all the way to the end and sending questions in, which is great. And we'll talk about how and where you can do that later. But one of the questions I got the other day was started with is we have a long history of interval or just time-based intervals of swapping out our assets. And it sounds like they have a few assets that are like 40 to 50 years old. And it's kind of coming up when they would expect to replace this stuff. But they're also in the throes of switching over to away from interval-based asset management replacement or even asset or interval-based maintenance. And they know they need to do some analysis to figure out, well, should we keep it or not keep it? Or what's the right trigger to replace the asset? And as I mentioned to you just before I hit record, it sounded like you had a few questions.
Yeah. There's a lot going on with this question. So, you know, we're switching from time-based maintenance to more of a predictive or on-condition-based maintenance. Mm-hmm. It's reaching the end of its life. Should we replace it? And then I started asking about data. You know, what type of data do they have? How good is their data? There's a lot going on here, and I want to kind of dissect the problem here. And then maybe hopefully we can provide some meaningful answers to the listeners. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a couple things come to mind when we started talking about this is, you know, we're moving from interval-based replacements to on-condition-based maintenance. So the questions I have there is, do we have failure data then? So if we've been doing this interval or time-based replacement, do we have data that we know when we've installed a new component or a new system, when we've removed it, do we have that failure mode data of why it failed, or did we remove it while it was still running? So that's suspended data if you want to talk about YVOL terms.
Right.
Now, if we don't have that and we want to look at it from more of a system level, do we at least know the failure date so we could do a CRO-AMSA or reliability growth plot? Do we have that type of data? Because that we can look at a system and see, is reliability improving? Is it stagnant? Is it getting worse? That may indicate, you know, is it towards the end of its life and do we got to do these things? So there's lots of questions I have here. And the other thing is, just because it's hitting what we expected to be the end of its life, do we have a business reason to make this change? So if reliability is not getting any worse and it's staying, you know, where we want it to be, or it's improving over time, it's not becoming too expensive to operate, maintain. Just because it's hit that endpoint, is there a business driver that says we must replace? So there's a lot of different things here that, you know, are just running around in my head right now as we go talk through this problem.
Yeah. You know, one part that I think was nice is that as a facility, they're saying, hey, we need to switch over to this condition based. And I suspect they did it more on their day-to-day maintenance things and switched away from interval based preventative maintenance and maybe started, you know, saying, hey, this has got a lot of advantages. If we do oil analysis and the oil's good for another couple months, then they're probably seeing the benefits of it now. And at this point, it seems it's trickled up to their major assets. And yeah, I don't have answers to most of the questions you just put out there because I got just a sketch of an outline of this thing. And one of the things that was in the email was that, well, we're going to just look at the failures and not the suspensions. And I said, no, the suspensions contain the bulk of your data if you have very few failures. And so proposed a couple of ideas how to analyze that.
Yep.
And one of them is with very sparse data, either because it wasn't recorded or if they do have good records that they're fortunate to not have that many downing events on this equipment. You have to really be cautious with the fitting anything to that or analyzing. I like the idea, like, use a crow AMSA or even a non-parametric method like mean cumulative function to see just is it getting better or worse. But one thing, James, I didn't hear what you were talking about, and what I suggested was, does the asset still produce a good quality product? Right? Are you getting the performance out of it? Instead of if you don't have data on the failure rates or repair rates or cost of maintenance of the system because it's just performing okay, is it showing up in the quality of the product you're producing? And if that's degrading, that might be your business case to move forward.
Exactly. And, you know, there's so many questions with this. But, you know, like you mentioned, even with suspended data, we can still do CROAMs or reliability growth plots. And that we can do at a system level, not an individual failure mode level, right? So if we want to run Weibull analysis and those types of things, that's an individual failure mode analysis. Yeah, you can do some fancy mixed failure mode ones, but from a simplicity sake, it's a single failure mode we're talking about, not the system itself. So if we're looking at evaluating that system, I would say that CROAMs is probably a good start. But like you mentioned, what else is driving this? Are we seeing that degradation in quality output, or are we seeing an increase in maintenance costs? If so, then we have to evaluate, well, do we need to do a upgrade or do some lifecycle costing and compare upgrade versus replacement with new and do these other things? I don't think replacing based on age alone is the right decision.
You know, and it's a tricky, I think the approach of going to, we're going to look at the condition of the equipment. We're going to monitor its performance and these other factors as a basis for making that decision to change or not change. The hard part here is that it kind of reinforces those operations managers saying, well, hey, it's not broken, don't fix it. You know, just keep it running. And then they may find themselves in a real problem where it has a catastrophic failure. And that's the hard part, is you don't know, unless you know, I don't know what kind of equipment this is, but until you get a good handle on, does the condition-based monitoring of the equipment cover all of the ways that are relevant for the way it would fail? Because, you know, if a critical internal component that you really can't replace destroys the equipment, and you weren't able to sense that was about to happen, now you're down, and it may be a major replacement and a major downing event. So it takes a bit of experience and understanding of what drives the eventual ultimate failure of your asset.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, did we do an FMEA or RCM analysis on this equipment prior to, so we have all those potential concerns? Do we have the monitoring systems in place to monitor all that? Those are all things we got to be very concerned about. Now, thinking as well, you know, they know that some of this equipment is coming up towards the end of its, you know, service life, if you will, or proposed service life. When you start getting to the asset management stuff, you start talking about remaining useful life. You start talking about, you know, your capital planning. Maybe that's part of the concern around this thing is, you know, they have capital to replace these things now because it was on the plan. Do we go ahead and pull that trigger?
Right.
Well, I think if we're doing that, we got to determine what is the remaining useful life. That involves looking at all the things we've talked about, right? Quality output, maintenance costs, but also, you know, are there regulatory changes that we are not in compliance with, or regulations we're not in compliance with, and we're grandfathered in because this equipment is so old? That might be a driver that requires us to make some changes to this as well.
Oh, yeah, a friend of mine, completely sidebar discussion. A neighbor of mine was refurbishing a house and preparing it for the market in a nearby neighborhood, and he went to get the final sign offs and all their permits and everything else, and the county said, no, it's on a septic system, that's not to code. And he goes, okay, what do I need to do? It passed an inspection. It's only 5 years old. What's the problem? And he said, the county said, no, you have to put in a system that we can monitor. It has a self-monitoring sensors and sends us a trigger when something's not right. And then we send you a notice that you have to fix it. And we charge you $100 or $150 a year for that service we provide. And the new system, instead of costing like $5,000, which a typical in our region, a septic system would cost to install or replace, is $60,000. And so the regulations, you know, just like what? So, you know, if you've got a grandfathered in piece of equipment and it, you're not paying, it has some emissions or whatever, and you're not having to pay for penalties for that or what, it could be, it might be the right thing to do for the environment. It might be the right thing to do for safety or efficiency. But sometimes just changing the equipment and then having it come up to code, at least in my experience talking across the fence, was you got to be careful. Sometimes it's, you don't want to open that can of worms.
Exactly. So there's a lot of different things that's coming from this question here, right? Like, you know, is it because we're doing capital? Is it because, you know, we hit that expected service life? There's lots of different things that's going on here. And I think, you know, we got to go back to what is the fundamentals for how we manage our assets. Do mm-hmm. we understand how it will fail? Are we monitoring the right things? And are we doing a check? You know, I'm thinking of a PDCA loop.
Right.
Are we checking to validate that what we're doing is effective and mitigating risks? And if not, then, you know, then that's the question. Well, do we upgrade it? Do we replace it? Do we change our PM program? Then those sorts of things start to come to mind. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot going on with this question that leaves, I think, me with a lot more questions than I can give for answers.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same way. I was able to answer the statistics question pretty straightforward. It's like, no, you need to address all the data you have and don't eliminate the suspensions because they're make it more difficult to understand it. And I then suggested going to non-parametric methods to get a better picture of what's going on. But I agree with you, James, is that it's a step back to, are you looking at the right data? Are you analyzing this in an appropriate way? And then it's, it is a difficult question. You know, it's these kinds of questions that keep me up at night sometimes. It's like, it was like the question that Rob posed to me a couple weeks ago on his end of the week get-togethers was, what do you do about obsolescence? How do you plan for obsolescence of your equipment or parts? I'm like, well, I think the phrasing was more, when do you plan for obsolescence? This is when you buy the equipment.
That's,
you know, but the issue here is that if this stuff's 40 or 50 years old, I really doubt that it's the asset equipment salesman making a call saying, hey, it's time to replace that. It'd be amazed to me that somebody would have a 50-year-old record and put you on the tickler file to come back and say, hey, it's running out of time. You better replace it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it might be, you know, the fact that when that particular facility was built, they know maybe it's a tank, for example, and they expected the tank holding water is going to last 50 years or whatever it may be. I don't know.
Right.
So maybe accounting saying, hey, this is done being depreciated over its expected life. What are we doing? I don't know.
Well, you know, I always, that logic always bothers me. The finance guys, just because it's been depreciated and it still adds value, like it still holds water and it's not costing us a fortune for failures or patching leaks or putting, you know, doing anything to it. Why it might have triggered that discussion saying, hey, we need to look at, do we need more capital here? But I don't think that should ever be the driver. Just because you're not taking a depreciation doesn't mean that asset's not valuable.
Absolutely. And I think that's where there is some work that needs to be done. Like, and understanding what is the business objective. Once we understand what that business objective is, then we can work backwards to see, okay, what decisions do we have to make mm-hmm. from there? What data do we have to make those decisions? Then we can pick the appropriate analysis tool. I think there's a lot of work that goes into these types of things. And, you know, it's very hard to provide an answer with not having all this information.
Well, you know, the other, I think, fly in the ointment, so to speak, using a rough analogy is that it might be a year lead time for some assets, and it's a risk. The whole organization needs to be involved with saying, are we going to order it now? And if it just sits on the dock, that's kind of just taking up space and capital. Or do we know it's going to last for a year, or is going to last for five more years, and so on? And the risk is that it won't. And so it's quantifying that risk in a way that your team can make a relevant decision. I think that's where it becomes tricky.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we're doing these types of things, there's got to be some sort of way to evaluate our assets and determine, you know, when do we do these things? So, you know, I got an example of an asset renewal model up in front of me right now. And, you know, it starts asking some questions, all right? Like, what type of degradation curve does it have? Is it linear? Is it exponential? Mm-hmm, what's the consequences of failure? What was the year it was installed? What's the default use for life of that? How many years are left on that? Right. From there, we start looking at what's the condition rating. We should be doing some sort of condition rating to establish, is it as good as new? Can it be restored with some minor work? That sort of thing. From there, we can figure out how much remaining useful life there is. All these different things, and propose the risk to these each asset. So then we can figure out which ones do we prioritize first. You know, but all of this requires good data. It requires, you know, understanding what is driving the need to replace these things, and building the business case behind it.
Yeah. And that's where I think it's going to be for this particular person in question, is if they've got sufficient evidence that they understand their risk and it's not a lot of hand waving, it's not really, really uncertain because of sparse data, it either says, hey, this stuff's rock solid, it's going to last a lot longer. Yet we've talked about a number of ways to go about getting that data, but it's beyond that. It's the FMEAs and the root cause analysis of previous failures, and can we get parts, and all those factors come into making this decision. But I think a significant part is, do we have enough information in order to convince ourselves that it is good for 5 years, not a year, and so on. But at some point, it's going to be addressing, well, what a balance between what's the consequence of it going down, balance with the lead time that we've got to it, and so on. I'm going to have to ask you for that strategy thing. You just, maybe we could either point a link to it or post it, if it's possible. But it becomes a very, very complicated question very quickly. Now, yes. You know, if you can get all the spare parts you need, or your shop can create those, and it's not super expensive or hard to do, that's a whole different situation than if the source, you have to do ultimate custom rebuilds and crafting. Only like two people in the world know how to make this particular gear, or, you know, all these kinds. That's a different situation then.
Well, that's why I asked about maintenance costs, right? Because, you know, reliability might be there, but maybe the maintenance cost is significant because of those reasons you just mentioned.
Yeah.
So there's all these different factors we got to consider. Now, like you, going back to the original question around the data, if we have that data, we can run some analysis and it'll tell us, is it getting better or worse over time? Those types of things. Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't be the only thing that drives the decision.
Right.
There should be all those other things you just mentioned.
But, you know, when I think about this kind of thing as an engineer in a plant, I like the new shiny equipment, because, you know, there's going to be all kinds of issues to get it up and running. And then we got job security for the next year. Oh, I'm being facetious there. But
yes, absolutely. But it's just, you know, there's enough constraints right now, especially at this time, that, you know, if we can avoid outlaying some capital, that's probably good for the business at this point.
Yeah. That's another macro consideration. Definitely. All right. Well, you know, I wanted to just throw this question at you, and I mentioned it just before we started, and you started spinning all these questions. So I knew we had a good topic. yeah, there's a lot to this. And then in 20 minutes, we're not going to cover all these aspects. But hopefully we gave a nice outline of that. Well, I'll add a link or a download for that strategy you were just mentioning, or, you know, some reference we can add to it, because it is a major topic, yep. Not just data analysis. I think it goes well beyond that. But I want to ask the list, you know, tell the listeners that, you know, this was a question we got in large part, I think, because we asked for these questions all the time. And, you know, James, lately we've been getting probably 3 or 4 questions a week showing up. And so it's no end to the topics for our podcast, which is great. One, it's people are listening and have questions. And hopefully we can provide some reasonable answers or outlines of answers for you, but also for the general population that's listening to our shows. So I want to say thanks for the question. And if you've got a question as a listener, you know, send it over to us. We're at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a form there. You can drop us a question. Both James and I are easy to find on LinkedIn or on our about pages. We have contact information there. And we certainly would love to hear from you with whatever questions you may have that we could dive into and help you get answers.
Yeah. And I'll add in one thing real quick, Fred. If the individual who asked this questions wants to get into it a bit more, connect with me on LinkedIn, send me an email message, and I'll be more than happy to jump on a call with you and kind of walk through some of the questions I had and see if we can get you a little bit more detailed of an answer.
Oh, that's awesome. Thanks, James. Yeah. And I'll extend that out. All the co-hosts on the show are very generous with their time. And I think it's because we really like good questions and we really like to help people move forward. So, yeah, you know, understanding what you're trying to do in back and forth dialogue is a great way to help you move forward. So thanks, James. It's a good reminder. All right. Well, James, well, let's see what other questions we got coming up and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Excellent. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.